The wedding dress still smelled like lavender water and crushed hope. Lily noticed it the moment she stepped out of the carriage, that ghost of a scent clinging to the wool cloak she had thrown over her bridal gown in the last possible second, when running was the only decision left. The lavender had been her mother's touch, years ago, pressed into every piece of linen in the Ashvale household, as though fragrance alone could hold a family together. Now it clung to fabric stained with mud at the hem, with a small tear near the left shoulder, where she had caught herself on the iron gate, while fleeing through the eastern garden wall. She had not looked back. That was the one thing she was certain of. She had not looked back. The village road stretched ahead in the blue-gray light of early morning, still and empty, the cobblestones wet from a rain that had passed some time before dawn. Lily stood on the road's edge with nothing but the clothes on her body, a small coin purse she had pressed beneath her corset 3 nights ago when the first suspicion settled into her chest like a stone, and the kind of silence that follows a life-altering decision. She was 23 years old. She had been, as of approximately 1 hour ago, almost a bride. Almost. 2 weeks earlier, the letter had arrived at Ashvale Manor bearing a seal she did not recognize. Black wax, pressed with the mark of a wolf mid-leap, a crown etched above it with the kind of deliberate weight that needed no explanation. Her stepmother, Renata, had opened it before Lily came downstairs. She remembered walking into the sitting room and finding Renata and her half-brother, Dorian, bent over the parchment with an expression she had never seen on either of them before. Not excitement. Something closer to relief. That had been the first wrongness. The letter, as it was explained to her over a breakfast she could barely eat, was a formal summons. The Alpha King of the Northern Reaches, a man named Caius, who ruled 4 allied packs from a fortress called Ironspire, had issued an order through his council for a suitable highborn mate candidate from the Southern Territories. The Ashvale name had been submitted, Lily's name specifically, not Renata's biological daughter Sarah, who was a year younger and infinitely more interested in power and rank than Lily had ever been. "Why me?" Lily had asked, very quietly, over her untouched tea. Renata had smiled the way she always smiled, wide enough to look warm, not wide enough to reach her eyes. "Because you are the last daughter of the Ashvale bloodline, the true line." The King's Council was specific. Lily had looked at Dorian across the table. He was 19, lean, with their father's eyes, and he had looked away. That had been the second wrongness. She had spent the following days trying to convince herself that it was not as cold as it felt. Arrangements were made with unsettling speed. A wedding date set within the fortnight, a seamstress brought from the city, a bridal trunk packed with items she had not chosen. Renata managed every detail with the efficiency of someone who had been planning this far longer than 2 weeks. When Lily asked why there was such urgency, she was told the Alpha King's Council required it. When she asked if she could write to him first, she was told it was not customary. When she asked to see the original terms of the arrangement, Renata's smile thinned, and she said the documents were with the family solicitor. The family solicitor had been dismissed 6 months ago. Lily only discovered that by accident, when she overheard a kitchen maid mention it to the cook, while Lily stood just outside the door. She began listening more carefully after that. On the fourth night, she heard them. She had not intended to. She had come down for water. Her room felt close and airless, the way rooms do when something unspoken is filling all the available space. The corridor outside the study was dark, the door slightly open, a thin stripe of candlelight cutting across the stone floor. Renata's voice first, low and precise. "Once she is delivered, the debt is cleared entirely." And then a man's voice Lily did not recognize. "The moment the king's mark is on her and the Ashvale name is transferred into the contract, the packlands pass to your son." That was the arrangement from the beginning. A pause. Then Dorian. "And she won't be able to contest it. Once she's at Ironspire, she will have no standing. She will be the king's wife, bound by northern law. Ashvale Manor, the forests, the silver deposits, all of it. Legally Dorian's. She'll have nothing to come back to. Lily had stood in the dark corridor for a long time after the voices moved on. The candle behind the door guttered. The cold stone pressed through her thin wool socks. She noticed, with the strange clarity that shock sometimes brings, that the corridor smelled of burnt tallow and old wood and the faint metallic trace of the iron wall sconces, and that these smells had always been home to her, and that in that moment they became something else entirely. She went back upstairs. She did not sleep. She thought with great care, and by the time gray light touched the window panes, she understood the full shape of what had been constructed around her. She was not being sent to be a wife. She was being sent to be erased. The bridal gown had been beautiful. She would admit that. Ivory linen, embroidered at the collar with small silver thread, fitted to her by a seamstress who had measured her in silence and never quite met her eyes. On the morning of the wedding, Renata had pinned her hair and told her she looked like her mother, which was the cruelest possible thing to say and was almost certainly said on purpose. Her mother had died when Lily was 9, her father 4 years after. She had been in this house, under Renata's careful management, ever since. She had worn the gown for 2 hours, long enough to stand in the chapel anteroom while the ceremony was prepared. Long enough to watch through a narrow window as the representative from Ironspire, not the king himself, only a steward bearing papers, arrived in a heavy black carriage and entered through the manor's front gate. Long enough to understand that no one in this building would stop what was about to happen. So she had stopped it herself. The coin purse held 11 silver marks, money she had quietly set aside over months from her small personal allowance, sensing without fully naming the sense that she might someday need it. The wool cloak had been nearest. The eastern gate had a broken latch that the groundskeeper had been meaning to fix for 2 years, and the road, at dawn, belonged to no one. She walked for nearly an hour before her feet began to protest seriously. The bridal slippers were not made for roads. A blister was forming on her right heel with quiet, persistent determination. At the crossroads outside the village of Dunmore, she stopped. North. South. The western road back toward Ashvale, which was no longer hers. And the northern road, longer, wilder, rising through forest and ridge toward the territories ruled by a man she had never met, who had, without her knowledge or consent, agreed to receive her as a commodity in exchange for clearing a dead family's debt. She thought about that man, the Alpha King, Caius. She knew almost nothing about him. Renata had offered no real information, only that he was powerful, that his territory was vast, that the northern Pax answered to him, and that the arrangement was an honor. The word honor had sat in her stomach like something gone slightly off. What she did know, he had sent a steward and papers rather than come himself. He had accepted an arrangement involving a woman who had no say in it, and somewhere in that fortress called Ironspire, people were expecting a compliant southern bride to arrive, signed and sealed, ready to be placed wherever was most convenient. She was going to disappoint a great many people. The decision that settled into Lily's chest at that crossroads was not loud. It had no heat in it, no dramatics. It was simply clear. She was not going back. She was not going to Ironspire as what they had arranged for her to be. She was going to survive, and she was going to reclaim what was hers, and she was going to do it on her own terms. She turned north, not because she trusted what waited there, but because everything behind her had already proven untrustworthy, and forward was the only direction that still belonged to her. The road climbed. The forest thickened on either side, pine and birch pressing close, the air growing colder and carrying the smell of damp earth and resin. Her blister worsened. The coin purse pressed against her ribs. Somewhere ahead, through miles of territory she had never crossed, was a king who had ordered a wife. He had no idea what was coming. She made it as far as the inn at Dunmore before her body staged a quiet revolt. The blister had broken somewhere on the second mile, and the cold had crept through the thin bridal slippers with methodical efficiency, numbing her toes first, then the balls of her feet, then climbing her ankles like something patient and deliberate. By the time the inn's hanging sign came into view, a carved wooden wolf, weathered to near shapelessness, Lily's walking had reduced itself to something that could not honestly be called a stride anymore. She pushed through the door anyway, because stopping was not an option she was prepared to entertain. The common room smelled of wood smoke, mutton fat, and spilled ale. A fire burned low in the wide stone hearth. Two men in traveling cloaks sat at a far table, bent over bowls of something steaming, paying her no attention. The innkeeper's wife appeared from behind a curtained doorway, took one long look at Lily, the ivory dress visible beneath the cloak's parted front, the mud on the hem, the controlled desperation in her posture, and said nothing for a moment that stretched just long enough to be uncomfortable. "Traveling alone?" the woman finally asked. "Yes," Lily said. Her voice came out steadier than she felt. "Northern Road." "Yes." The woman studied her for another breath. She was perhaps 50, broad-shouldered, with the particular quality of stillness that belongs to people who have seen enough of the world to stop being surprised by it. "Sit by the fire. I'll bring something hot." Lily did not argue. She spent 4 silver marks on a bowl of broth, a heel of bread, a pair of worn leather boots 2 sizes too large that the innkeeper's wife produced from a back room with no explanation, and a night in a narrow room under the eaves with a straw mattress and a single candle. It was the most valuable 4 silver marks she had ever spent. In the morning, she stripped off the bridal gown and left it folded on the chair. She kept the wool cloak. The innkeeper's wife, whose name was Marta, appeared at the door before first light with a plain linen dress, brown, practical, the kind of garment that asked nothing of the wearer and drew no attention. She held it out without ceremony. "The dress will slow you down," Marta said simply. "On that road." Lily took it. "Thank you. Don't thank me." Marta paused at the doorway. "The northern road goes through Greywood Passage. Don't stop in Greywood. Don't speak to anyone who smells like pine resin and something metallic you can't name. Keep moving until you're through. A beat. You understand what I mean?" Lily understood. Shifters. A rival pack, perhaps, or worse. Unaffiliated wolves, the kind without territory or loyalty, or the restraint that pack structure usually imposed. "How far to the Iron Spire borderlands?" Lily asked. Marta's expression shifted just slightly. 2 days on foot. Less if you find a cart willing to take you." She looked at Lily for a long moment, with the kind of assessment that had nothing unkind in it. "You're Ashvale, aren't you? The daughter." The surprise must have shown on Lily's face. "Word travels," Marta said not unkindly. "A bride gone from the altar at Ashvale Manor, steward from Ironspire leaving empty-handed. That's not a small thing, girl." She paused. "Renata's already sent riders." The warmth from the borrowed dress evaporated instantly. "Which road?" Lily asked. "The southern riders will assume you've gone toward the city. That buys you time." Marta looked at her steadily. "But you'd better not waste it." She did not waste it. The northern road in the early morning was cold and pale, birch trees standing like stripped bone on either side, their bark glowing faintly in the thin light. Lily walked fast, the oversized boots stuffed with rags Marta had pressed into her hands at the door, her braid tucked beneath the cloak's hood. The plain dress was rough against her skin and smelled of someone else's life, and she was grateful for both. She thought as she walked. Thinking was useful. Feeling right now was a luxury she could not afford. The facts arranged themselves. Renata had built a transaction around her, the Ashvale lands and silver deposits promised against some debt Lily had never been told about, with Lily herself as the instrument of transfer. Once she signed the king's marriage contract, the property passed to Dorian by northern legal precedent, which apparently recognized a bride's assets as relinquished upon formal mating bond. She had not known that. She suspected she was meant not to know. What she did not yet fully understand was the Alpha King's role. Had he known what the arrangement truly was? Had he knowingly accepted a woman being delivered like a parcel to settle another family's accounts? Or had his council negotiated it without his full awareness, the kind of administrative marriage brokering that powerful men with large territories sometimes left to advisors? It mattered. The difference between a man who had knowingly purchased her situation and one who had been handed misinformation by intermediaries was significant. Not that either version made her position comfortable, but it shaped what she could argue, and Lily had decided, somewhere on the road between the Manor and Dunmore, that she was going to argue. She was not going to disappear into that fortress as an obedient southern bride. She was going to arrive, and she was going to demand to speak to the king directly, and she was going to tell him exactly what had been arranged in his name, and what she wanted in return for her cooperation. The Ashvale lands, her family's estate, returned, legally, to the true bloodline, to her. She had nothing to offer in exchange except the truth and whatever value the King's Council had originally seen in the Ashvale name. She intended to make that enough. The Greywood Passage announced itself by smell before she could see it. Pine resin, yes, and something beneath it that she could not name, but that raised the small hairs on the back of her neck. Lily kept her eyes forward and her pace steady. The trees pressed closer here, older and darker, their canopy thick enough that the morning light filtered through in long, dusty beams that illuminated nothing useful. The road narrowed. She was halfway through when she heard them. Two men, stepping out from the tree line to her left, with the particular unhurried quality that meant they had been waiting. They were large, both of them, the loose-limbed ease in their posture that she had learned to recognize as shifter, the weight behind their stillness. One had a scar bisecting his left eyebrow. The other was younger, watching her with an expression that was not quite a smile. "Northern road's a long walk," the scarred one said. "Not threatening, exactly. Not yet." "It is," Lily agreed, and kept walking. "You're traveling alone." He matched her pace. The younger one moved to her right. The geometry of it was not accidental. "I am." She did not slow down. Her heart was beating with great insistence, but her feet kept their rhythm, because stopping was what they wanted. "There's a toll," the scarred man said, "on this stretch of road, for unaffiliated travelers." "I'm affiliated," Lily said. That paused him. "With?" She made the decision in the space of a single breath, the way decisions sometimes make themselves when the alternative is worse. "Ironspire. I'm traveling to Ironspire under summons." She held her voice flat, informational, the way Renata had always spoken when she wanted to close a conversation. "I am a formal guest of the Alpha King's household. If you have questions about the toll arrangement, I suggest you take them up with his border guard." A long silence. The trees dripped. Somewhere above them, a bird called once and went quiet. The scarred man looked at the younger one. Something passed between them that Lily couldn't read. Then the scarred one stepped back, just slightly, and the geometry changed. "Move along, then," he said. She moved along. Her hands were shaking by the time she cleared the passage and the trees opened out again into pale light and a wider road. She pressed them flat against her thighs beneath the cloak and kept walking, because shaking was allowed as long as she was still moving. The cart came from behind her mid-afternoon, a merchant heading north with a load of wool bales and the incurious disposition of a man who had driven this road many times. He slowed without her asking, looked her over, and said he was stopping at the Iron Spire way station before nightfall, and she was welcome to the back of the cart if she didn't mind the wool. She climbed up without hesitation. The wool was scratchy and smelled powerfully of lanolin, and she buried herself into it with something approaching relief. As the cart rolled north and the road climbed through open heath, the sky going amber ahead of them and the air sharpening with altitude, Lily allowed herself, very briefly, to feel the weight of the last 2 days. The chapel anteroom, the eastern gate, Marta's face, the Greywood Road, the shaking hands. She had left everything she had ever known without a plan, and almost no money in boots that didn't fit. And she was still here, still moving, still thinking. The Fortress of Ironspire appeared first as a suggestion, a dark rise against the ridge ahead, towers barely distinguishable from the rock they were built on. Then, the light caught it differently, and she could see the scale of it. Immense. Ancient. Built as though the mountain itself had been persuaded to take the form of walls and battlements. Banners she couldn't yet read snapped in the ridge wind. Somewhere inside those walls was the man who had ordered a wife. Lily sat up straighter in the wool and looked at it steadily. She had no idea what was waiting for her in there. But she had arrived on her own feet, in borrowed boots, having walked through Greywood and lied with complete composure to two shifters twice her size. She had arrived without being delivered. That felt important. That felt, in fact, like the only advantage she had. She intended to use it. The way station sat at the base of Ironspire's outer road like a held breath, a long stone building with torches already burning in their iron brackets, a stable to one side, and three guards in dark leather armor standing at the gate with the particular posture of men who were accustomed to turning people away. Lily climbed down from the merchant's cart before it fully stopped, straightened her cloak, and walked toward the guards with her chin level. One of them stepped forward immediately, tall, with close-cropped hair, and the flat assessment of someone trained to read threat and rank simultaneously. "State your business," he said. "I'm here under the Alpha King summons," Lily said. "My name is Lily Ashvale. I was expected at the manor 2 days ago." A pause. The guard looked at her, the plain dress, the oversized boots, the single braid emerging from the wool cloak's hood, with the kind of careful blankness that meant he was recalculating quickly. "You were to arrive by carriage," he said, "with the steward." "The steward returned without me. I traveled separately." She kept her voice even. "I'd like to speak with whoever is responsible for receiving the king's guests." Another pause. The two guards behind him exchanged a look she wasn't meant to see. The tall one turned and said something low to the man on his right, who disappeared through the way station door at a near jog. They made her wait outside. The wind off the ridge was cold and persistent, carrying the smell of pine and distant snow and the faint metallic edge that she was beginning to associate with shifter territory. Something in the air itself that was different here, charged in a way she couldn't name. She stood still and did not let her teeth chatter, which required genuine effort. The man who came out was not a guard. He was perhaps 50, gray at the temples, wearing a dark wool coat with the iron spire crest, the leaping wolf, the crown, embroidered at the breast. A steward, by his bearing. Not the same one who had come to Ashvale Manor, but the type. He looked at her for a long moment. "Miss Ashvale," he said finally. His tone was difficult to read. Not warm, not hostile. Careful. "I am Counselor Wren. I manage arrivals for the King's household." A beat. "You were expected to arrive by formal escort." "I'm aware," Lily said. "I made alternative arrangements. Alone, on foot, through Greywood." The road was passable. Counselor Wren studied her with an expression that might, in different circumstances, have been the beginning of respect, though it was wearing the clothes of concern. "The king has been informed of the situation," he said carefully. "There are questions about the circumstances of your departure from Ashvale." Of course there were. The steward would have returned empty-handed and reported it. Renata had sent riders south, assuming Lily had fled toward the city, but Ironspire would have had its own communication by now. She had known this moment would come. She had been composing for it since the merchant's cart. "I'd like to address those questions directly with the king," she said. "In person," and Counselor Wren blinked. Just once, but it was enough. Miss Ashvale, I understand that's unusual, she said. But what I have to tell him concerns the terms of the arrangement made in his name, and it's not something I'm willing to relay through intermediaries. He should hear it directly. She held his gaze. I've walked 2 days to say it. I'm not going to stop one door short. They gave her a room to wait in. Better than she expected, actually. A small chamber off the way station's inner corridor. Stone walls hung with a single tapestry in dark blue and green. A narrow bed with a wool blanket. A washing basin with actual clean water. And a candle burning on the table. She washed her face and hands, rinsed the road from her skin as best she could, and sat on the edge of the bed to wait. She did not let herself lie down. Lying down felt too close to surrender. An hour passed, maybe more. The candle burned lower. She could hear movement through the walls, boots on stone, low voices, the sound of horses being moved in the stable yard. This place was alive in a way Ashvale Manor had not been for years. There was a density to it, a gravity, the feeling of a place where consequential things happened with regularity. The door opened without a knock. Lily stood. The man who entered was not Counselor Wren. He filled the doorframe in a way that was not aggressive, but was entirely impossible to ignore. Broad through the shoulders, dark braids falling to his chest, leather armor crossed with worn brown straps, a wolf fur mantle at his shoulders that moved when he stopped as though it had a moment's additional momentum. He had a cut on his jaw that looked recent, still dark at the edges. His eyes, when they found her, were very pale, a gray-blue that registered in the candlelight as almost colorless, and that landed on her with a quality of attention she had not experienced before. Not hunger, not appraisal. Something more like absolute notice, the way a trained hunter notices movement in a tree line, not because it is small, but because nothing escapes him. He stopped just inside the door and looked at her in silence. She looked back. You're Caius, she said. Not a question. I am, he said. His voice was low, unhurried, the kind of voice that did not need volume to carry weight. You came yourself, she said. You asked to speak to the king directly. The faintest movement at the corner of his mouth. Not a smile, exactly. An acknowledgement. It seemed impolite to send someone else. Lily absorbed this. She had prepared for a council chamber, for intermediaries, for layers of protocol to push through before she reached him. She had not prepared for him standing 6 feet away in a room barely large enough for both of them, looking at her with those colorless eyes, as though she were the most interesting problem he had encountered in some time. She did not allow the lack of preparation to show. Then I'll say what I came to say, she said. The arrangement made with the Ashvale household was not made honestly. You were given my name as a willing candidate from a noble family. What actually happened is that my stepmother used me as a dead instrument. The marriage contract your council drew up contains terms that would transfer my family's estate, including silver-bearing land my father left specifically to the true Ashvale bloodline, to my stepbrother Dorian the moment I signed. I was not informed of those terms. I was not asked. I was dressed and pointed at a chapel. Silence. Caius had not moved. His expression had not changed exactly, but something in it had shifted, a sharpening. A stillness that was more intense than the stillness before it. Go on, he said. I'm not here to refuse the arrangement out of hand, Lily continued, because this was the part she had composed most carefully. I'm here to renegotiate it, on terms that are honest. She kept her hands still at her sides. I'll come to Iron Spire. I'll cooperate with whatever your council requires from this alliance. But in exchange, I want the Ashvale estate legally protected in my name, the fraudulent transfer clause removed from the contract, and the debt my stepmother used as leverage examined and verified, because I suspect it may not exist in the form she claimed. Another silence. Longer this time. Caius looked at her with an expression she could not fully read. Not anger, not dismissal. There was something in it that might have been assessment, and beneath the assessment something she was less equipped to name. "You walked 2 days," he said slowly, "through Greywood Passage, in a bridal gown, to renegotiate a contract." "I changed out of the gown at Dunmore," she said. "And yes," this time it was unambiguous. The corner of his mouth moved just slightly, in something that was definitively not a smile but was adjacent to one, brief and contained and gone almost before it registered. He was quiet for a moment. Then, "The terms you've described, the transfer clause, you have documentation?" "I have nothing," she said. "I left with 11 silver marks and a wool cloak, but I heard the conversation clearly. And I know who was in that room, and I know your council's steward left Ashvale with papers he was given by my stepmother's hand, not by mine." She paused. "If you send someone to examine the original property records at the Southern Registry, you'll find the discrepancy. The Ashvale estate was entailed to the true bloodline in my father's will. What Renata submitted to your council contradicts that." Caius was still watching her. The candlelight moved between them. "You understand," he said carefully, "that this requires verification, that I cannot simply revise a council-negotiated contract on the account of an uncorroborated claim." "I understand that," Lily said. "I'm asking you to look. That's all." She held his gaze, and found it harder than she'd expected. Not because it was unkind, but because there was so much in it, that absolute notice, and it had nowhere to deflect to in a room this small. "I'm asking you to treat this as a question worth investigating, rather than an inconvenience to be managed." A long moment. "Where is the young man?" Caius said. "Your stepbrother." "At Ashvale, waiting for the transfer to complete." She paused. There's a question about whether the debt itself was real. My father was a careful man. He did not leave debts. I never saw documentation of any financial obligation to an outside party. I believe it was fabricated." Something moved through Caius's expression at that, quick and cold, and entirely different from everything that had preceded it. "Fabricated," he repeated. "To justify the transaction," Lily said. "To give Renata a reason to need the arrangement, and your council a reason to find it acceptable." The room was very quiet. Outside, the wind moved against the stone walls. The candle flame bent and straightened. Caius looked at her for a long time, long enough that she became aware of her borrowed boots and unwashed braid, and the fact that she had walked into this room to confront the Alpha King of the Northern Reaches, with no evidence and no allies, and nothing but the structure of her own argument. "You'll stay here tonight," he said finally. "Proper rooms will be arranged. Tomorrow you'll be taken to Ironspire." He paused. "I'll send a rider to the Southern Registry by dawn." It was not a concession. It was not a promise. But it was not a dismissal either. Lily exhaled very carefully, making sure it didn't show. "Thank you," she said. Caius looked at her once more, that unreadable, absolute notice, and then turned and left without another word, pulling the door closed behind him with a quietness that somehow carried more weight than if he'd slammed it. Lily sat down on the edge of the bed. Her hands, she noticed, were perfectly still. She had not expected that. Ironspire in daylight was something that required adjustment. Lily had seen it first in the amber light of late afternoon, distant and severe against the ridge. Up close, in the cold, clear morning, it was something else entirely. A fortress that had not been built so much as grown stone upon stone over what must have been centuries. The older sections dark and iron gray, the newer additions only slightly less weathered, the whole of it pressing upward with a kind of geological stubbornness that made human ambition feel small by comparison. The outer walls alone were twice the height of anything she had known at Ashvale. The gate was open when the escort carriage passed through, but the guards on either side stood with a stillness that made the openness feel conditional. She was given rooms in the eastern wing, not lavish, but substantial. Stone walls softened by tapestries in deep burgundy and forest green. A wide bed with a canopy in dark wool. A writing desk beneath a window that looked out over an interior courtyard where two men were training with wooden practice swords in the frost. A fire had already been laid and lit. Clean water in a ceramic basin, a bar of soap that smelled faintly of pine resin, folded linen on the chair. Someone had thought about this room before she arrived. She did not know what to do with that. A young woman appeared within the hour. A maid named Petra, practical and quiet, who brought a tray of breakfast without being asked, and set it on the writing desk with the efficiency of someone who understood that a person who had walked 2 days through the northern road probably needed to eat before she needed anything else. Petra did not ask questions. She did not linger. When she left, Lily sat at the desk and ate the bread and soft cheese and dried fruit in deliberate silence, watching the men train in the courtyard below and thinking. The rider had gone south at dawn. That much Counselor Wren had confirmed when he escorted her to the carriage that morning, with the formal courtesy of a man recalibrating his initial assessment. The records query would take days. The Southern Registry was a 3-day ride, and the response would need to be verified. In the meantime, she was here, in Ironspire. Under the Alpha King's roof, without a contract signed, without a formal status, in a situation that had no clean precedent she could name. She was not a prisoner. She was not a guest, exactly. She was a question, she supposed, an open question that Caius had agreed to investigate rather than close. It was more than she had expected to get. She did not see Caius for 2 days. The fortress had its own rhythms, the movement of guards at the hour changes, the sounds of council meetings behind heavy doors, the smell of the great hall at mealtimes drifting through the stone corridors along with wood smoke and roasted meat, and something herbed she couldn't identify. Petra brought her meals and a change of clothes, plain but well made, a dark gray dress in heavy linen, a belt, a second wool cloak in better condition than her own, and pointed her toward the library when Lily asked if there was somewhere she could spend time without being in the way. The library was extraordinary. 3 walls of shelves, floor to ceiling, accessible by rolling ladders on iron tracks. A long central table with 4 candelabras, maps in wide flat drawers beneath the eastern windows. Lily spent the better part of both days in there, not because she was hiding, but because it was the one place in the fortress where her presence seemed to raise no questions. People passed through, a young scholar with ink-stained fingers who nodded without speaking, 2 council aides who collected documents from the map drawers with focused efficiency, and left. But no one lingered, and no one looked at her with the particular assessing quality she felt in the corridors. She read about Northern Pack Law. She found 3 volumes on territorial inheritance, and 1 slim, much-annotated text on mate bond contracts, the legal framework that governed formal claiming in the Northern Packs, the obligations it created, the protections it conferred. She read that section twice, carefully, because it was relevant, and because it contained things Renata had certainly known and deliberately not told her. A claimed mate under Northern law was not property. She was a protected party. Her assets, if documented prior to the bond, could be legally ring-fenced from transfer. The transfer clause Renata had buried in the contract was, as far as Lily could determine from what she was reading, only enforceable if the mate signed the document willingly and without documented coercion. If she could prove coercion, and she thought she could, the clause was void. She was writing notes on a piece of parchment she had asked Petra for, the small focused pleasure of a well-constructed argument assembling itself in her mind when she became aware that she was no longer alone in the library. She did not hear him enter. She simply felt it, a shift in the quality of the room's attention, the way a space changes when something significant enters it. She looked up. Caius was standing at the far end of the central table, a document in one hand, reading it. He was not in armor today. A dark tunic, leather breeches, boots, the wolf fur mantle absent. Without the full weight of his formal presentation, he was no less imposing, but differently so. There was something more visible about him, more present, she supposed was the word. He looked up from the document and found her already looking, and neither of them spoke for a moment. "You've been in here both days," he said. "The collection is excellent," she said. He looked at what she had in front of her, the mate bond volume, the parchment of notes, and something shifted in his expression. He set down his own document and moved to the other side of the table, not close, keeping the full width of the dark oak between them, and looked at what she had written without touching it. "You've been reading the inheritance law," he said. "I've been building my argument," she said, "in case the registry records don't come back clearly." He looked at her then. That quality of absolute notice again, which she was beginning to understand, was simply how he looked at everything, not a performance of intensity, but the genuine article. "You don't trust that they will." "I trust that Renata is thorough," Lily said. "She had years to construct this. I'd rather have two lines of argument than one." A pause. Caius pulled out the chair across from her and sat down, which surprised her. Not because it was threatening, but because it was unexpectedly direct, informal. He rested his forearms on the table and looked at her steadily. "Tell me about your father," he said. The question caught her off guard. She had been prepared for legal questions, procedural ones, challenges to her account. Not that. "Why?" she asked. "Because the arrangement came through his estate," Caius said. "And because you said he was a careful man who left no debts. I want to understand who he was." Lily looked at him for a moment. The fire in the library hearth shifted, sending a new angle of light across the table between them. "He was a scholar, mostly," she said. "He managed the estate competently, but it wasn't. It wasn't where his attention lived. He liked maps. He spent a great deal of time in a room like this one." She paused. He was quiet, not cold, just interior. He kept his important things close and didn't speak them unless he meant to. She stopped, because she was saying more than she had intended, and the reason was sitting across from her with an expression of genuine attention that was difficult to speak into without continuing. "He sounds," Caius said carefully, "like someone who would have left a very clear will." "He did," Lily said, "which is why I know what Renata submitted to your council was not faithful to it." Caius was quiet for a moment. "She was his second wife." "Yes. He married her when I was 12. Dorian is her son from a previous arrangement. My father adopted him formally, which is how the name transfer was possible." She kept her voice level. "My father trusted her. He was not always a good judge of that particular quality in people." Something moved through Caius's expression, brief and carefully contained. "Neither was I," he said, "apparently, in this matter." It was a significant thing to say. Lily understood it as such. Not a confession of weakness, but an acknowledgement of accountability, offered without evasion. It recalibrated something in her assessment of him, slightly, but meaningfully. "Your counsel negotiated in good faith," she said, "based on information they were given." "My counsel should have verified more thoroughly," he said. There was no self-pity in it, just a flat, clear statement of standard not met. "That is also on me." A silence settled between them that was not uncomfortable exactly. The fire crackled. Outside the library windows, the courtyard had emptied, the frost deepening as the afternoon aged. "Can I ask you something?" Lily said. "Yes." "The original arrangement, what did you actually want from it? From the alliance with the Ashvale name?" She held his gaze. "Not the land. I understand the strategic value of the southern territory," But that alone doesn't require a marriage contract. What was the actual purpose? Caius looked at her for a long moment. Stability, he said. The Northern Pacts have been without a Luna for 6 years. There are factions within the Council and beyond it that use that absence as leverage. An alliance marriage was meant to close that particular argument. He paused. I was not looking for something elaborate. I was looking for someone capable and willing. Capable and willing, Lily repeated, neither of which was confirmed before the arrangement was made. No, he said. It was not. A beat. That is, in retrospect, a significant omission. Lily looked at him. In the library's quiet, with the fire and the smell of old paper and pine resin drifting from the courtyard, it was possible to see him as something other than the abstract power she had been bracing against since Dunmore. He was careful, she thought. Not in the way of someone performing carefulness. In the way of someone who had learned that carelessness was expensive. She was not ready to trust that. Trust was a thing that needed more than 2 days and one honest conversation to build. But she filed it carefully alongside the other things she was noting. I'd like to know when the rider returns from the registry, she said. You'll be the first I tell, Caius said. He stood, retrieved his document from the end of the table, and paused at the edge of the library's light. The notes you've been making, the mate bond inheritance argument, it's sound. He looked at her steadily. It's also more work than most people in your position would have done. Then he left. Lily sat alone in the library with the fire and the old maps and the half-written argument on her parchment and was honest with herself for exactly one moment. She had walked into this fortress expecting an adversary and had found something considerably more difficult to navigate. Not an enemy. Not yet a friend. Something uncomfortably close to a person she might, under different circumstances, have wanted to know. She picked up her pen and went back to work. The third night, she woke to shouting. Not close. Somewhere in the lower corridors, voices raised and then cut short, the sound of boots moving at speed. Then silence again, the dense, weighted silence of a building holding its breath. Lily sat up in the dark, listening. The fire had burned to embers. The courtyard below her window was lit by 2 torches, and in their light she could see 3 guards moving toward the northern gate at speed. Then Petra was at the door, not knocking, just there, her face pale in the candlelight she carried. What is it? Lily asked. Riders from the south, Petra said. They arrived an hour ago. A pause that lasted 1 beat too long. Miss Ashvale, they brought your stepbrother. Lily went very still. He's in the Great Hall, Petra said carefully, with 2 of Lady Renata's men. They're claiming you were taken from Ashvale under duress, that you're being held here against your will. Petra's voice was steady, but her eyes were not. They're requesting your return. The cold that moved through Lily then had nothing to do with the dying fire. Renata had not sent riders south to find her. That had been a feint. She had sent Dorian north, straight to Iron Spire, to reframe the entire situation before the registry records could arrive, before Lily's account could be verified. To walk into Caius's Great Hall and stand in front of his council and say that Lily was a runaway who had fled her arranged marriage in a state of distress and needed to be returned to her family's care. It was elegant. It was exactly the kind of move Renata made. Lily threw back the blanket and reached for her cloak. She was not going to let this be decided without her in the room. The Great Hall of Iron Spire was lit by a double row of iron chandeliers, their candles burning with the kind of steady, indifferent brightness that made everything visible and nothing soft. Lily had not been in this room before. It was vast, stone floor, high vaulted ceiling, a long council table to one side, and at the far end, a raised platform where a single chair stood with the deliberate weight of something that was not quite a throne, but was not trying very hard to be anything else. Caius was standing in front of it. Not seated. Standing, with his arms at his sides and that quality of absolute stillness she was beginning to recognize as his particular form of controlled displeasure. He was in full formal dress, the wolf fur mantle, the leather armor, the braids. He looked like what he was, the Alpha King on his own ground, at midnight, being told something he had not yet decided what to do with. Dorian stood 20 feet away with two men Lily recognized as Renata's personal guard. Large, in Asheville livery, wearing the careful expressions of people executing a plan. Dorian himself looked younger than she remembered, or perhaps just smaller in this room. He had their father's eyes, she had always thought that, but he was using them now in a way their father never had, scanning the room, calculating, landing on her as she came through the side door, and shifting immediately to something that was not relief, but was wearing its face. Lily? He took a step toward her. Thank the moon you're... Are you all right? We've been... Don't, she said quietly. He stopped. Something flickered behind his eyes. Counselor Wren was present, along with two other council members she hadn't been introduced to. Older men, standing to one side with the expression of people who had been woken at an inconvenient hour and were reserving judgment. Several guards. Petra, at the door behind Lily, still holding her candle. Caius had not moved, but his eyes had found her the moment she entered, and they had not left. Miss Asheville, Counselor Wren said carefully, your family has expressed concern for your well-being and requested... I heard what they requested, Lily said. She crossed the floor at a measured pace, not rushing, not hesitating. The stone was cold through her thin slippers. She stopped where she could be seen clearly by everyone in the room and looked at Dorian directly. You came here to say I was taken against my will. You disappeared from the chapel, Dorian said. He had recovered his composure. His voice was even, concerned, calibrated. You were clearly distressed. Mother is worried. We only want to... Your mother, Lily said. Arranged for my signature on a contract that would transfer the Asheville estate to you the moment I was bound here under Northern law. Without my knowledge. Without my consent. Using a debt that I believe she fabricated. She kept her voice level and clear, the way she had rehearsed it in the library, though she had not expected to need it quite this soon. I didn't disappear from the chapel because I was distressed. I left because I understood what was being done to me and I chose not to cooperate with it. A silence. One of the older council members shifted his weight. Wren was very still. Dorian's expression did something complicated. A ripple beneath the surface of his composure, there and gone. Lily, that's... I heard you, she said. 3 nights before the wedding. You and Renata and the man she brought from the Southern Brokers. I was in the corridor outside the study. I heard everything. She paused. The pack lands pass to your son. The moment the king's mark is on her, she'll have nothing to come back to. She looked at him steadily. Do you want me to continue? Dorian said nothing. Caius, from the far end of the room, spoke for the first time. Counselor Wren. His voice was quiet and entirely sufficient. Send a second rider to the Southern Registry tonight. I want the original Asheville estate records and Lord Asheville's will. The primary document, not the copy submitted to this council. Additionally, and here something in his tone became very precise, I want the record of any debt instrument issued against the Asheville estate in the last 10 years. All of them. Original creditor documentation. Wren moved immediately. Caius looked at Dorian. You'll remain in Ironspire as a guest until the records arrive. It was said with complete courtesy and zero warmth. Your mother's men will be housed in the outer ward. They will not be armed within the walls. One of Renata's guards began to object. Caius looked at him once. The guard stopped. Lily did not sleep again that night. She sat at the window of her room and watched the courtyard below, where one of the stable hands crossed twice with a lantern, and the torches guttered in the ridge wind, and the sky over the northern mountains went from black to a very dark blue, and then, very slowly, to the gray that preceded dawn. She thought about her father's study, which had smelled of beeswax and old parchment. She thought about the way Dorian had looked when she recited what she had overheard. That ripple, that flicker. Not guilt, exactly. More like the expression of someone who has been constructing a version of events and watched it develop a crack. He had not been the architect. She was almost certain of that. Renata had built it. Dorian had allowed it, had accepted the outcome, had possibly told himself that Lily would be fine. A king's wife, well kept. What was wrong with that? But he had been in that room and he had not said stop. That was its own kind of damage. She was still sitting at the window when the knock came at her door. Not Petra's practical tap, but a single knock, brief and sure. "Come in," she said. Caius entered. He was no longer in formal dress. The mantle was gone, the armor partially loosened, and he looked like a man who had also not slept, which on him registered less as exhaustion and more as a particular kind of stripped attention. He carried nothing. He stood just inside the doorway. "The first rider returned an hour ago," he said. Lily stood. "The Ashvale estate records at the Southern Registry show a will filed by Lord Edmund Ashvale, dated 11 years ago, entailing all primary properties and the silver deposits to his eldest natural child. His language is unambiguous." Caius paused. "The document submitted to my counsel by your stepmother contained alterations. In 3 places, the entailment clause was removed. A debt instrument was added, a note supposedly signed by your father in the last year of his life, acknowledging a significant financial obligation to a creditor, whose name does not appear in any other registry document we can locate." Lily exhaled. "The debt," Caius continued, "appears to have been created specifically to justify the arrangement. The creditor listed does not exist as a registered entity. My counsel's solicitor confirmed it within the hour." A pause, and then something shifted in his expression. Not anger, but the cold edge just beneath it. "My counsel was given forged documents." "Yes," Lily said. "And you walked 2 days through Greywood to tell me so." "I had to," she said. "There was no one else who could." Caius looked at her in the early gray light from the window, and the quality of his attention was different from anything she had encountered in him before. Not the assessment of the first night, not the careful listening of the library. Something quieter and more direct, the way a door looks when it has been opened rather than merely unlocked. "What do you want?" he said. "Not what you argued for in the way station. What do you actually want?" It was a question that required honesty, and she knew it. "The estate," she said. "My father's estate, returned to the rightful line and protected under whatever law will hold it there." She paused. "Dorian is young. He was used by his mother as much as I was, in a different direction. I don't want him destroyed, but I want the record corrected. I want it known what was done." Another pause, smaller. "And I want to stop being moved around like something that can be placed wherever it's most convenient." Caius was quiet for a moment. "The estate will be returned," he said. "My counsel will issue a formal correction. The transfer clause is void. It was predicated on forged documentation, which nullifies the original contract entirely." He let that settle. "Renata will face a legal challenge through the Southern Council. That process will take time, but it will proceed." "And Dorian?" Lily asked. "That is in part your decision to make." He said it simply, without making it heavy. "He is not innocent of what happened. But as you said, he is young, and he was shaped by someone who gave him permission to look away. What you choose to do with that is yours." Lily looked at him. The gray light was strengthening. In it, he looked very real. The scar on his jaw, the tiredness around his eyes, the steadiness that was not performance, but simply what he was made of. "You said in the library," she said carefully, "that you were looking for someone capable and willing." "I did," he said. "I'm not willing to be an instrument of political convenience," she said. "I'm not willing to be arranged or managed or placed. If I am ever going to be anyone's Luna, and I am not saying that I am, it will not be because a contract requires it." She held his gaze. "It will be because I have decided that it is what I want." A long silence. "That," Kaya said, "is the only version I would accept." The weeks that followed were not simple. Nothing worth having came simply, and Lily had stopped expecting it to. The legal proceedings moved through the Southern Council with the grinding deliberateness of institutional process. Renata, when formally confronted with the evidence of the forged documents, did not confess so much as cease to deny, which was its own form of confirmation. The Southern Council found in Lily's favor within 6 weeks the estate, the silver deposits, the Ashvale name, all of it returned to the rightful line. The fraudulent transfer clause dissolved, the fabricated debt expunged from every registry it had contaminated. Dorian came to find her one evening in the Iron Spire Library, where she had established what had become a reliable habit. He stood in the doorway looking younger than his 19 years, with their father's eyes and the particular expression of someone who has run out of things to hide behind. "I knew it wasn't right," he said. "What she arranged. I knew, and I didn't stop it." Lily looked at him for a long moment. "I know," she said. "I'm sorry." He said it simply, without decoration. She thought about her father, who had trusted the wrong person and never quite recovered from what that cost him. She thought about the eastern gate with the broken latch, and the road before dawn, and the graywood passage and the borrowed boots. "Go home," she told Dorian. "Manage the properties honestly. Be better than she raised you to be." A pause. "That's what I want from you." He nodded once and left. She did not watch him go. Caius did not press her. That was the thing she noticed most in those weeks, the absence of pressure. He was present, consistently, in the particular way of someone who keeps their word without announcing it. He appeared at the library in the evening sometimes, with documents or questions, or occasionally nothing at all, just the quiet company of a man reading on the opposite side of a table. He ensured she had access to the council proceedings. He asked for her opinion on the legal arguments and listened to the answers as though they were worth the listening. When she woke from a nightmare one night, the chapel anteroom, Renata's hands pinning her hair, the smell of lavender curdling into something wrong, and went to sit in the corridor because the room felt airless, she found him already there, leaning against the opposite wall with his arms crossed, as though the corridor at midnight was a perfectly ordinary place to be. "How long have you been there?" she asked. "Not long," he said. She sat down on the cold stone floor across from him, and they stayed like that for a while in the dark, not talking, the fortress quiet around them. And she thought about the word mate. How contaminated it had seemed when Renata used the arrangement as a transaction. How different it felt in a corridor at midnight with a man who had simply shown up. "I'm not afraid of you," she said eventually. "I know," he said. "I was, at first. Not of you specifically. Of what you represented." She looked at the stone floor. "Everything in my life that had authority over it turned out to be using it. I needed to know you were different before I could let the walls come down." "And now?" he said. She looked up at him. In the dark corridor, the quality of his attention was what it had always been. That absolute notice, fully present, nothing performing. She had been watched her whole life by people who were assessing what she was worth to them. This was not that. She understood the difference in her bones. "Now," she said, "I think I've known for a while. The bond, when it was finally acknowledged, was chosen. That was the part that mattered. not a ceremony driven by council necessity, not a contract arranged by someone else's hands. On a morning in early spring, with the ridge wind carrying the smell of thawed earth and pine and the first suggestion of warmth in the air, Lily stood in the great hall in a dress she had chosen herself, deep blue, good wool, no lavender, and looked at Caius across a room that no longer felt vast and foreign, but like a place that had slowly become hers. The council was present. Wren, who had become something approaching an ally over the difficult weeks, the guard she now knew by name. Petra, at the edge of the room, very deliberately not crying. Caius looked at her the way he always looked at her, as though nothing escaped him and nothing needed to. "You don't have to," he said, quietly enough that only she heard. "Even now. Even here." "I know," she said. "That's why I'm going to." The Ashvale estate was restored and managed honestly, its silver deposits providing income that Lily directed in part toward the village of Dunmore and its way station, and in part toward a fund for unaffiliated Omegas in the southern territories. Women without pack protection, without advocates, without anyone to walk 2 days to fight for them. Marta, when a letter arrived explaining the fund and its origins, read it twice, and did not show it to anyone for a long time. Renata faced the Southern Council's judgment, and was stripped of the Ashvale name, the Ashvale properties, and the social standing she had spent 20 years constructing. She left the Southern Territories. No one recorded where she went. Dorian kept his word. The properties under his management were run honestly. He wrote to Lily twice a year. She wrote back. It was not warmth exactly, but it was something. The careful architecture of people choosing to build rather than burn. Caius ruled the northern reaches with the same quality he did everything. Steadily, without performance, present in the way that mattered. His Luna, the southern lords eventually agreed, was formidable. Not because she was decorative or compliant, or what had been arranged for, but because she had walked through Greywood in borrowed boots, and talked her way into a king's fortress on the strength of an unverified argument in a father's will, and had not once looked back. She had done it all on her own terms. She still had the wool cloak. It hung in the back of her wardrobe, mud stain at the hem long since washed out, the tear at the shoulder neatly repaired by Petra on a quiet afternoon. She did not wear it. She did not need to. But she kept it, because it was important to remember the road, the cold of it, the length of it, the loneliness of it, and the fact that she had walked every mile herself. Some mornings she stood at the eastern window of Ironspire, with the ridge below and the forest stretching away to the south, and thought about the girl who had climbed a gate in a wedding dress before dawn, and decided that forward was the only direction left. She had been right. It had only ever been forward.